And back here on Kate Radio, Afternoons with Aaron. And of course, it's a Monday. And one of my favorite parts of Monday is we get to talk to this guy, sports director at the Minnesota News Network. And of course, the voice of Golden Gopher Athletics, our good friend Mike Graham. And Mike, a good afternoon. I know you're busy today, so we appreciate the time because you are going out to Buffalo tomorrow and you're going to be rocking on Wednesday with Def Leppard and Joan Jett and others. I got to tell you this, I'm a little zealous because that sounds like a great time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You know, we've talked occasionally over the years about music, and I think last week we even talked about it a little bit. But, yeah, my son and I, and my son's not a big he's big music. I mean, he literally makes music, and, like, you can listen to one of the songs he's produced on, like, iHeart, Apple Music and Spotify and Prime Music and all this stuff. So he's big into music. He's not a big hard rocker like his old man, you know, who grew up in the 80s and 90s. And, you know, Motley Crue and Def Leppard and Poison and Joan Jett. Those are the four. It's going to be four bands. They've been on tour all summer. It sounds like they're getting fairly decent reviews. You know, we all know Vince Neil, the lead singer of Motley Crue, is not, you know, his voice is, you know, when you scream and holler for years and years, the voice isn't going to be the best. But the music's been great, it sounds like, and we're looking forward to it. We picked New York, Buffalo, not New York City, but Buffalo, New York, and a buddy of mine that coached baseball with me coming up with our kids up through and his son. So it's a father-son trip, and off we go tomorrow. The concert's Wednesday. We'll come back late Thursday, and it'll be kind of the last hurrah here before football season.
So, Mike, what's your son's name? So he's got music I can listen to?
Yeah, if you'd like, yeah. So he and a buddy from high school have produced, I don't know, they got 10 or 12 songs out. So my son produces the music they basically create it on the computer. He's really good at it. And you know, I have a home studio in my basement to do some of my radio work. So his good buddy sings. He has a great voice. It's a high school friend of his. And so he sings, and they've recorded many of these songs in my studio in the basement, so it's kind of cool. The name of their band, if people are really interested, and I appreciate you giving me a chance.
Absolutely.
When I said that, but if you want to go to Spotify or Prime Music or Apple Music or what have you, the band is called Three Leaf, the number three, and then it's L-E-A-F. Their top hit, I guess, if you want to call it that, none of these really are hitting the radio or anything, is a song called Oasis. They've got a song called Magnetic. They've got a new one called, I think it's Hotel Key. The one song, Oasis, I think's had over 250,000 listens, you know, 250,000
nice
downloads. So that's kind of cool. They're certainly enjoying it, and they bang it out, and they're just a couple of 22-year-old kids who enjoy it. So there you go. Three Leaf, the number three, and then Leaf, L-E-A-F.
That is awesome. I'm going to have to pull up some of music. We might have some of music from them as intro music to you for now on. I'm going to look into that.
Yeah, there are a couple, as they all the music seems to, there are a couple of naughty words in some of the songs, so you got to be careful. Don't just hit it cold. But most of it is pretty good, clean, wholesome fun. But you know how 22-year-olds can get, you know. I mean, it's nothing nasty. It wouldn't offend anybody. But, you know, there might be some naughty words, and one or two naughty words in there someplace. But honestly, like I'm telling you, it's not just because it's my kid and whatever. But I do enjoy it. I mean, I think, if one of their songs popped on, you know, one of the radio stations, I don't think people would be like, oh, well, you can tell that's a couple of dudes just trying to crank it out in a basement. I think it does sound good. His friend Isaac has a great voice. So I think people enjoy it. And if not, too bad. You know, they're enjoying it and having fun. But, yeah, try to listen, see what you think.
I will absolutely do that. Now, Mike, speaking of naughty words, Rocco Baldelli, he used a few words that you can't use in music or on the radio after the game yesterday. Give me your initial thoughts, and we've talked about this already on the show today. So the Twins thought they had an out in the top of the 10th. They go to replay, and they say that there's catcher interference. So they call the guy safe at home plate. Rocco Baldelli in the history of being the Twins manager. That's by far the most emotion we've seen by Rocco. Rocco, you know, he went crazy, I guess, Edward the Cowl.
Yeah.
But now, did he?
Man, I guess.
I didn't see the actual game, but did he actually get thrown out of the game?
He got thrown out in about 4 seconds.
Okay, he did. Okay.
Technically, yeah. Technically, you're not even supposed to. You can't argue the replay because it, you know, it's final, and the umps on the field have nothing to do with it. It's all back in New York, so he's yelling at the umps, and the umps, I'm sure, are like, "Hey, dude, we can't do anything." And Rocco knows that as well. You could tell at the end of his argument, he was looking up into the press box, you know, as if to say, looking at some metaphorical replay booth, and he was dropping the F-bomb on them, and you could see it if you were a good lip reader. The late Vin Scully would have had a delightful time with that. He's one of the best lip readers ever. I always got a kick out of listening to him and explain what people were saying, and he was always about right. But, it was a strange... obviously, it was a weird play. I've never been a fan of that rule. I don't think the rule is worded right. I don't think the rule I think the rule's needed. I don't think that baseball anymore should have a place where a catcher's a sitting duck and he just gets plowed into, especially in today's day and age with concussions and guys just bigger, stronger, faster. I mean, you can put a guy in the hospital. I mean, it goes all the way back to Ray Fosse and Pete Rose, right? Ray Fosse was never the same after that All-Star game plowing at home plate. So I'm in favor of that. Eliminate the plow. Some people think it's exciting. I don't. I frankly don't get my thrills off of watching a catcher just take one into the chin and, you know, get his marbles knocked loose. They don't need that in baseball for me to like it. If somebody else does, that's their problem. That said, the rule's ridiculous, they just made it too complex. All they really had to do was make the rule say you have to slide. You can't plow them. Look, and yesterday would have been a perfect example. The ball beat you, man, and my catcher blocked the plate. You slide in. That's not on the catcher. That's on your base coach and you deciding that you thought you could test the outfielder's arm. And if the ball beats you and the catcher blocks the plate and you slide and it's blocked, it's blocked.
I don't know
why we had to make it so difficult here. And people, oh, we need a chance to knock the ball loose. No, you don't. If the throw beats you, it's just like second base. If the throw beats you and you get tagged out, you're out. I mean,
correct,
you don't see second baseman getting plowed, right? I just never have understood the idea that we had to put this stupid rule in place. Oh, you got to have a sliding lane, which frankly the guy had yesterday, I thought. To me, the part of the rule is that the catcher gets the fair territory, the runner gets the foul territory. And there was all kinds of foul territory for the runner, who, by the way, afterwards admitted that, I on purpose slid straight into him to try to, you know, bait the replay guy into it. I think when I saw it live, Aaron, I'll tell you, I thought that there was going to be some trouble because he did block it, there's no doubt. And I thought, God, are they going to overturn that? And then when I watched the replay, I thought, I don't think they can. I don't think there's enough. He gave him almost the entire foul territory. He had the ball when his knee finally hit. So I don't really know how they came up with the overturn. But I'm not even, and I don't even think Rocco's upset about the. You know, I mean, obviously he's upset about the overturn, but just the rule's dumb, and then the consistency with which the rule's applied is even dumber because that. You know, there's been many worse, more egregious blockings of the plate and impeding runners that guys just don't have the guts to overturn it. Why they decided yesterday that was a time in extra innings to overturn it, I do not know. So to start off with, the rule is stupid. Just make him slide. And if you're cut off because the catcher has it, you're out. Sorry, base coach, you made a dumb mistake. You tested a guy's arm and you got beat at home. And on top of it, if the catcher doesn't have the ball and he's blocking the plate, then you can run into him because it's obstruction and you're safe. So there didn't need to be any of this, gobbledygook new rule to it. I think the rule's still the same, but I grew up in Iowa. That was the rule. You had to slide. If the ball beat you, if you plowed the catcher, you were kicked out of the game and you got kicked out for your next game. If you just slid, you were out. The catcher could block the plate if he had the ball. It doesn't have to be that hard. We don't need to be macho and say, "Hey, let's just, we can plow the catcher." That's the whole point of the rule. So just say you got a slide, and he slid, and the ball beat him. He's out. It's not that hard. But to make it this complicated, Rocco was right. It's an embarrassment. And, you know, Mike Redmond was the manager of the Marlins when this first came out five, six, 7 years ago. I don't know the exact date. If you want to find a good video, he had a similar reaction as Rocco Baldelli did yesterday. I think that was the first time that rule was put in place, and it was even more ridiculous than yesterday. It was a Marlins and Reds, I think. If you got a second, go to YouTube and try to search that out, because that was pretty crazy too. But it just doesn't get overturned much because everyone knows it's a ridiculous rule. All the rule has to say is you have to fly, or if you want to go in standing up, fine. Whit Merrifield could have slid in foul territory and tried to reach his hand in, and might have made it, you know,
because
the throw
yep.
was high.
Right.
You know, he might have made it. But to put this stupid kind of rule in is, you know, and then to make some guy in New York have to decide if there's a lane or not and when the ball got there. And I saw people tweeting yesterday, well, they showed a picture and the runner's 40 feet from home plate and Sanchez's left foot is in foul territory. He's like, gee, you didn't give him a lane. I'm like, the guy's 40 feet away. He doesn't know where the ball's going. You know, and that certainly didn't impede the runner at that point. Like, what are we doing here with this rule? So the rule's ridiculous, you know, and I don't know if this will be an impetus just to put a simple slide rule in. It doesn't have to be complicated. Like, hey, tip your cap. If the guy threw you out and he's blocking the plate, go get a tag. I mean, that is what it is. And unfortunately, they've decided to make it really complicated. And it is, you know, and a lot of people think it was the right call. And I, you know what? Technically, by the letter of the law, I you can't argue that much about it. There was, you know, he did block the plate. I feel the reading of the rule is if you have the ball, you can block the plate. And I thought that is what happened. But they said that his slide started before he had the ball and the impingement was there. And, but we don't need all that. Just simply say you got a slide and call it a day, and we wouldn't have had any problem yesterday whatsoever, and maybe the Twins win the game. Who knows?
Mike Grimm on a Mike Grimm Monday here on Kate Radio. Good news for the Twins. Again, they split the four-game series. Cleveland split their four-game series. White Sox split their four-game series. Twins are up over Cleveland by a game, a two-game lead over my White Sox. The Twins start a two-game series at Dodger Stadium coming up tomorrow night. And you mentioned his name, Mike. Let's talk about the passing of Vin Scully. And as broadcasters, we grew up with guys like Vin Scully. We looked up to those guys, wanted to be like those guys. I talk about maybe the influence that Vin Scully had on you.
Yeah, for sure. And let me first, I just want to follow up because I don't want to make it sound like I think that call cost the Twins. Because I joked to myself when I was watching it that, and you're right, we've never seen Rocco so animated in his whole time of being the Twins manager. And I thought to myself, well, Rocco, if it was that important to you, don't sit Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton for a whole game. How about you play at least one of them? If you really wanted to win the game that bad, you could play one or maybe both of those guys on a Sunday when you got a day off on Monday, right? And there's no rule that says just because you gave that run up, you couldn't score the next inning. And they had some opportunities and had some poor at-bats. You know, Byron Buxton, what he struck out in three pitches, I guess that was in the ninth. But you get what I'm saying. It literally gave them the winning run, but that didn't mean the Twins couldn't still win the game.
Absolutely.
But
yep.
to start the game with both Carlos Correa and Byron Buxton on the bench on a Sunday when you got Monday off and Thursday off, and you're playing in California where it's a little, you know, where it's nice weather, you're not going to get any rainouts, you know the games are going to be happening, so you can, you know, if it was that important that you're going to throw your hat and go ballistic, then, hey, you could try to win the game earlier with some strategic things as well. But anyway, I digress. But I did want to get that in because I know people are probably like, oh, there goes Grimm again, blaming the refs on the Twins loss. That's not my point. My point, as always, is, you know, either a rule's dumb or a call's bad. And if we can confirm the call's bad or the rule's dumb, I'm not, you know, I'm going to say it because, that's part of our work. And my opinion as a reporter, if I see a bad call, we'll say it's a bad call because not everyone gets to watch the game. And again, obviously, people have to understand that's what that would be in my opinion. But the rule's idiotic. And so that's my point. But it didn't cost the Twins. I mean, it cost them the winning run, but that doesn't mean they couldn't have won it another way. So I just wanted to punch that in there. And I was very aggravated that the lineup was what it was. And then the manager showed so much disgust at that call that it meant so much. And I'm like, well, if it meant so much, let's grind it out here. You're in a pennant chase in August, man. Ask your shortstop to play. You know, I mean, it isn't – anyway – So I digress for that. Vin Scully, let's talk about that.
Let's talk about Vin.
Yeah. Vin Scully, so I got a chance to meet him one time when I was in St. Louis. It had to be in 2006 because at that time he was only doing home Dodger games. The Cardinals opened their new park in 06 and he flew out with the Dodgers because he wanted to do a game at the new stadium. Cause he had done, I don't know what the number is. It's gotta be what in the 70s, 80s, 100, I don't know, of stadiums. So he wanted to make sure that he got a series in when the Dodgers played out in St. Louis in 06 when they opened the new, what is now, you know, the new, it's not new anymore. It was open in 06. But so I met him briefly, he just couldn't have been a nicer guy. Honestly, I don't even remember the content of the conversation because I think I was kind of, you know, but just kind of met in the hallway and I was kind of blubbering because I was in a little bit of awe. But it was great. And he couldn't have been nicer. My regret was, I've regretted this about a lot of things when I was in St. Louis, was I always wish I would have had a couple of baseballs in my work bag with a Sharpie. Not to get autographs from players or whatever, but guys like you and me, to get autographs when Vin Scully's in town or Milo Hamilton's in town or John Miller's in town or, you know, some of these real legendary voices. Harry Callis, I met him one time. And you know, to have... you know, it would have been kind of cool to have a collection of baseballs with those guys, right? I think they would have gotten a kick out of it. Milo Hamilton, I was covering the NLCS one year. He was with the Astros, the legendary Hall of Famer, and he's a pretty interesting guy. We're both from Iowa, so we connected a little bit that way. And he offered and gave me an autograph of a program of the day we were one of the days we were talking, he's like, because he was the featured guy in it. It was his last, had to be 2005 or six. It was his last year as the broadcaster, so he was on the cover, and he asked if he could sign one for me. And I must have that somewhere in my things. And someday I need to dig through a lot of my old artifacts and find that. And then of course I worked with Jack Buck for a year when my first year in St. Louis was Jack's last year. I got there in July of 2001, and he passed away in 2002, June of 2002. So that season, that last half of 2001, I saw him just about every day at the ballpark and spent some time with him, and that was great. And I do have a couple of autographed things from him that he signed for me, and again, he offered it up. So in terms of Scully, I remember growing up, the baseball on NBC had the game of the week. And when you grow up and you don't have cable, the only time you're a baseball fan like I was and a lot of my friends, the only time you get to watch baseball was the big events or the Saturday game of the week. And I would make an appointment to watch Saturday game of the week. And he and Joe Garagiola were the team. That was on one of the games. And then Bob Costas and Tony Kubek was the other. That was the other tandem that worked at NBC game of the week. They always had two, and then you'd kind of get a regional, and in case one rained out, they had one. And it was awesome. I mean, kids now have no idea, right? Like, why would you spend your Saturday watching a baseball game and you could watch any? And the answer is because you couldn't watch any back then. If you wanted to watch, that was your chance to do it. And I mean, we literally, when I can remember when I was 14, 15 years old, we would absolutely go to friends' houses on Saturday and watch baseball. I remember watching a Dodgers-Cardinals game. Mike Socha had this big game. It had to be 85, 86, 87, somewhere in there. And we were all at a friend's house watching the game in his kitchen, you know, just because that was all you got. Now that would never happen, right? I mean, your kids might watch the game, but it wouldn't be the reason. I remember Vin doing those games for NBC, no question.
Now, Mike, speaking of Vin Scully, I got to share this story with you. It was back in 2005. I was at a Twins-Dodgers game with my now wife and my mom and dad. And my mom's a huge Twins fan, always has been. And it was a game where Heap Sop Choi hit three homers against Brad Radke in the game. And the fans kept chanting Heap Sop Choi every time he came up. And my mom was tired of it. She was tired of listening to it. So the third time he came up, my mom went to the restroom. So she got to hear in the restroom Vin Scully call the third home run of Heap Sop Choy. She couldn't believe it. She left the stands because she didn't want to watch anymore, so she went to the restroom, and he hit another one, but she heard Scully on the call.
Oh, my gosh. This is out of Dodger Stadium.
Out of Dodger Stadium, yep.
Oh, man, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, Vin had such a great way about him, and even right up until the end, he had just a great memory. Obviously, just no one had a delivery like him. People, I know I've talked to programmers and different people who are in the hiring mode, and you go through strings with them, you know, with who the big national broadcasters are, and there was definitely in the late 80s, early 90s, all these young guys trying to get into radio, and these guys would send tapes, and everybody, you know, all these hiring guys doing the hiring, you're like, yep, another guy that wants to sound like Vin Scully, not realizing only Vin Scully can sound like Vin Scully.
Correct,
so,
yep.
You know, everyone was trying to sound like Vin, but he can tell a story like nobody else. It was just amazing the way he would go through research and stories, and even like sometimes you'd hear the story and you'd say, man, that's a great story, and then you go back and listen to it and you're like, you know, it was an okay story, but the delivery was so freaking good, we thought it was one of the greatest stories we've ever heard. I mean, that's how good of a speaker the guy was. You're like, well, actually, the content of that story was just fine. You know, any other broadcaster would have had it, but nobody could make it sound like Vin. And so I think that's probably the best compliment you can pay a guy, right?
Absolutely. The late Vin Scully, 60-plus years with one organization, the Brooklyn Dodgers, and then the Los Angeles Dodgers, obviously a broadcaster that many broadcasters like myself and Mike looked up to growing up. Mike, we could talk a lot longer about broadcasters. I know Ray Christensen was a guy that I grew up with, and John Rooney used to be the voice of the White Sox. Listen to him for many, many years through a scratchy radio. I used to sit in a car at night and listen to White Sox baseball, picking it up on some station out of Chicago through a scratchy radio. I did that for, well, a long time growing up. So
yeah, that was probably 670. That's where the Cubs games are now. But and then John and I worked together for a year and a half in St. Louis because he ended up leaving the White Sox the Cardinals job, and he's still down there doing the Cardinals job. And if you really remember way back, John Rooney was doing Big Ten basketball games back in the early to mid-80s. He and Dick Bremer and some others would do those regional games. And, John Rooney he's been around for a while as well. And, someday we should. I have some great Ray Christensen stories. I mean, just one of the true thrills, Aaron, of being the voice of the Gophers was the chance I got to meet and hang out with Ray on what I would call a semi-regular basis the first 3 or 4 years I lived in town, because Ray was doing some pregame segments with me and different things. So he's just such a wonderful man. But, I know we're running out of time, so I can't do it justice. But sometime we should definitely talk about Ray Christensen.
It's a Mike Grimm Monday, the voice of Golden Gopher Athletics, sports director at the Minnesota News Network, ready to go. Rock in Buffalo coming up this week. And I do have to end this segment by saying I listened to broadcasters growing up because I always wanted to be a broadcaster. Now I listen to broadcasters because I want to get better at what I do. And the guy I'm talking to, I listen to him all the time to try to improve myself because he's one of the best. Mike Grimm on a Mike Grimm Monday. My friend, have fun in Buffalo, and we'll talk next week.
Yeah, you're too kind, first of all. Thank you. You can also listen to me to find out what you shouldn't be saying on occasion. So I keep it both ways. I feel that's my service to everybody. But, yeah, we'll have some fun in Buffalo, and can't wait to talk next week.
Okay, perfect.